This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is almost 7:07 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezril. And our next story is about COVID-19 cases detected in a Rohingya refugee camp in Bangladesh and the implications for the community there. So we've talked about the migrant community here in Malaysia, namely the efforts being mobilized to help them during this pandemic and the xenophobia that's been leveled against them. But the situation is different altogether in Cox's Bazar, where refugee camps house over 1 million Rohingya refugees, the largest refugee site in the world.
That's right. And the first two new cases of COVID-19 have just been reported there. One is a refugee who lives at the Kutupalong camp, and the other is a local Bangladeshi citizen who lives in the surrounding area. And while poor sanitation and lack of access to robust healthcare facilities are unfortunately a given, living conditions have been made worse after the government forced NGOs to cut their presence by 80% as a result of the nationwide lockdown.
And on top of that, the Rohingya live in extremely cramped spaces. As many as 60,000 to 90,000 people are squeezed into each square kilometer, with families of up to a dozen sharing small shelters. So to give you an idea of what a small shelter is like, take your kitchen and imagine 12 people having to live in that small space.
So it seems like, I really don't know what else to say. It just seems like on the surface, at least, a hopeless and heartbreaking situation, because the camps already have to deal with lack of access to sanitation and water. People struggle with food and getting their nutrients, right? We've heard throughout this pandemic how everyone's been advised to keep a healthy lifestyle, to reduce contracting the virus, and for some people, it's just not possible. And I don't know, honestly, what the alternatives are if the government is putting restrictions for NGOs' presence in the camps, because, from what I've read from some of the people I've engaged who work with Rohingyas, mm-hmm. NGOs are really the only lifeline for a lot of their needs, from food to medication.
Yeah, and it's also a struggle, given that the key weapons that you have in fighting COVID-19 are things that you cannot utilize if you happen to live in Cox's Bazar. It's that, you're supposed to wash your hands frequently, but there is poor water and sanitation facilities in the camp. There is insufficient water, and most of these are used for drinking. And you also have limited supplies of hygiene essentials like soap. Physical distancing, as mentioned, is impossible. It's something that you must do, but given that it's such a small space, not at all possible. A lot of facilities, based on reports by Doctors Without Borders, most of these facilities, toilets, food distribution centers, they're all communal. So they're all shared spaces. And there's also already a pressing low standard of health already present at these camps. So, if anything, old problems that you could sort of, skim by has been pretty much reopened and made worse again by this pandemic.
Indeed, aggravated, I think, is certainly the word. And I wonder how the government is going to deal with this, because we've heard how, in countries like Singapore, here in Malaysia, it is in the interest of the government to take care of migrants and foreign workers, because especially considering that, they work as security guards, they work in our kitchens. So protecting them is also in the interest of everyone's public health, Malaysians' public health. But I wonder in Bangladesh how that would apply in Cox's Bazar, given that many migrants or many refugees don't go in and out as often as migrants in perhaps in other countries. So I don't know if one approach is for the government to just isolate them and let the infection fester, which would be a really, really, really unfortunate case.
After this, we're going to speak with Rachel Tan, Program Officer at the Asia Pacific Refugee Rights Network, for details and what is actually happening on the ground. We are going to have that conversation right after this. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 7:13 on the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezriel, and we're talking about COVID-19 cases that have just been detected in a Rohingya refugee camp in Bangladesh, or Cox's Bazar. And we're going to now find out what's going on the ground together with Rachel Tan, Program Officer at the Asia Pacific Refugee Rights Network. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So what was the situation like in those camps before the pandemic was first reported in China and made its way to other countries?
I think in the camps, there's always been primary health care centers that are within the camps. And if there are any severe cases in terms of health care, referral will be made to government facilities. The situation in terms of livelihood and income generation, generally these activities are not formal or not allowed. So they are fully dependent on food assistance from organizations, WFP in particular, the World Food Programme. And some also engage in informal labor outside, even children. So some children are seen to be engaging in informal labor outside, or begging in the cities. And sometimes they would engage in trade, like a drug like yaba. And so refugees really are dependent on food assistance and complementary food assistance. So sometimes they resort to finding better opportunities when they do not have those. And that's when you see people being trafficked or smuggled outside, like to our shores, for instance. So humanitarian assistance in those camps really is within the limitations defined by the government. So it's under certain restrictions that the government set out. One other thing that really has been an ongoing problem from a long time ago until now is the cutting down of internet communication, and this has really hindered dissemination of information, service provision, and humanitarian actors have had difficulties with that. And yeah, so those are just some of the situations before COVID.
And right, and. And what's it that like? What's the situation like now on the ground? Have you heard or seen anything from people there that stick out to you?
Well, everything now with the ongoing problems and challenges is just being exacerbated. And humanitarian presence right now in the camps have been reduced significantly. However, the humanitarian actors have been taking a lot of precautionary measures to ensure that COVID did not reach the camp, which is why even though there has been so many cases in Bangladesh and 100 cases almost in Cox's Bazar, only now do you have 2 cases coming out of Cox's Bazar camps. It's because of the preventive measure that has been taken by all these humanitarian actors. I think there are different options that has been explored in terms of how to manage this. And one of the things that they have done in terms of social distancing is that the government has turned football fields into markets to ensure social distancing. But this has not always been observed by the people. And of course, protection concerns are increasing. Child protection, GBV, gender-based violence, human trafficking of women and children, and anti-humanitarian sentiments as well, because they are seen as vectors of the disease. So that's what's happening in the camps. I think because of COVID, the services have already been reduced to a list of only essential services. So what does that entail? Sometimes it is not clearly communicated by the government, and it changes according to the development of the situation. Humanitarian actors need to continuously engage with the government to find out what is allowed, what is not, who are the humanitarian actors who are allowed into the camp, who are not.
Right. And just looking at the efforts to educate and spread awareness about COVID-19? How is that taking place on the ground? You mentioned that it's difficult to disseminate info because of a cut in internet services.
Yeah, so a lot of local, refugee community members and also people from the local host community, they are also being trained in order to curb this restrictions around internet access or communication access. So they are being trained and they are being trained to disseminate this information that are critical to the community.
And given that the government has scaled back the presence of NGOs in the camps, that, like you've touched on just now, are there any alternative measures that can help prevent infections, considering only essential services are allowed in and out of the camp?
Well, the government, there's continuous engagement with NGOs, and I think in terms of reduction, it has definitely had an impact, and the community-based organizations and local-based volunteers, like what I mentioned earlier, they are being trained and to support the kind of delivery on that level. Engaging with the government sometimes need to happen with the UN agencies and the INGOs, and they are usually the ones who try to get a sense of what the changes are on the ground and how best to address that. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
I guess as a follow-up to that then, since certain services will be cut back, how will this affect the existing services that the NGOs need to meet with other refugees? Because now they don't only need to worry about COVID-19, they have to worry about all these pre-existing conditions that were there even before this pandemic came.
They really need to balance. So I think having building a plan to ensure that the rights of the communities are adhered to has to, they are already talking about what are some of the plans that they can build on in terms of countering that, and also knowing that certain service provisions are going to be limited, how we can work around that with the communities themselves, to empower the communities themselves, how best to work around which humanitarian actors should provide which essential services. So there is a lot of prioritization and reprioritization, and this constantly changes. So it's really hard, really difficult to say exactly what can be done. It really depends on the situation as it develops.
Right. And where do world bodies like the UN come into this picture? You know, how do they plan to intervene?
I think UN bodies, the UN has always been very involved together with all the other humanitarian agencies. And they have been key in in enabling certain discussions and plannings, and also to assist the government in terms of building capacity and also lending their expertise and also providing whatever specialists in order to kind of address this issue. So I think the UN has been proactively stepping into trying to address this issue. And they also do a lot of mobilization together with the other humanitarian actors and organizations. So it's not just UN alone. There are many agencies that are taking part in this as well.
So what's the long-term solution then to ensuring that pandemics and crises like this don't have crippling effects on migrant and refugee communities like the Rohingya?
I think the important thing is really that in the camps, level of awareness and information needs to happen, especially for prevention and health awareness, and also a response on a community level. So I think one important thing is to consult the community on their health needs and include them in conversations that are affecting their lives. I think this is absolutely critical. And providing timely and accurate information to help better response, and also to kind of a government needs to provide humanitarian access to humanitarian actors. So I think this is critical, especially like, for instance, something as basic as internet access. I think that has really hampered a lot of services and the necessary communication between communities and also humanitarian actors. So all those, I think the government needs to play a more critical role in creating an enabling environment for humanitarian actors to act. And also at the same time, security and protection in the camp needs to be ensured because issues like trafficking, smuggling and gender-based violence, they happen because there is the lack of security, a sense of security and lack of protection within the camp. So these are really absolutely critical. And also looking ahead, planning for disease outbreaks, something similar to COVID or something, of this scale, I think it has to be well in advance. Regular health response needs to be there. And just better preparation and protection response that has to be planned way ahead of time.
Rachel, on that note, thank you again for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
That was Rachel Tan, program officer at the Asia Pacific Refugee Rights Network, giving us a picture of what's going on the ground in Cox's Bazar and in Bangladesh, which today saw its first few COVID-19 cases detected. We are going to be back after the 7:30 news to wrap up the biggest news of the week. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.